In our study of the Gospel of Luke, we come to verse 31 of chapter 18. Jesus is foretelling his death a third time. And the passage says, Jesus is talking, "We go up to Jerusalem, and all things that are written by the prophets concerning the Son of Man shall be accomplished." Here's Jesus' attitude toward the Old Testament, that all these prophecies written of him must be fulfilled. And it says, "He shall be delivered unto the Gentiles," and that means the Romans, of course. "He shall be mocked and spitefully entreated and spitted on, and they shall scourge him, beat him, and put him to death on the cross. And on the third day he shall rise again." Here's Jesus' foreknowledge. He knew exactly what was going to take place during coming days. And of course, he still knows the future. And that's why there's a reality to prophecy. God knows the future, and God controls the future. He sits on the throne. Oh, we have a general idea about some things that might be. Now, I've got some plans for tonight. I have a class. I've got some plans for Wednesday. I have a prayer meeting and things like that, but I'm not positive that I'll be here. Jesus may come back before Wednesday or something like that. Jesus knew exactly what was going to take place on which day. And it says, they didn't understand these things. They understood none of these things. And I think what's going on, they were still expecting a Messiah that would reign and rule. In other words, they still hadn't gotten straight the difference between the first coming and the second coming of Christ. But this says very clearly, they didn't understand what Jesus was talking about. Now, as Jesus comes near Jericho, there's a blind man beside the road begging. And he finds out that Jesus is passing by, and he cries out, "Jesus, thou Son of David, have mercy on me." Jericho was an old city. Joshua took it, you know, when they crossed Jordan. And then Jericho had been rebuilt just a little ways down the road by the Romans. And really, you have two Jerichos down there. And sometimes that makes it difficult. The point is that Jericho was a crossroad. They had roads going up to Damascus and across Palestine to Egypt, and in almost all directions. It was a big crossroad center, and I expect that's why we've got these stories, several of them, about the publicans there. The Romans were taking up taxes on these big roads. Anyway, there's this blind beggar, and he calls out to Jesus. And it says, they which went before rebuked him, that he should hold his peace. Listen, Jesus talking to folks, don't make so much fuss. Keep quiet. And it says, he cried more loudly, "Thou Son of David, have mercy on me." And Jesus commanded that they bring him, and he's brought. And Jesus says, "Well, now, what do you want?" And he says, "Lord, that I may receive my sight." And Jesus said to him, "Receive thy sight. Thy faith hath saved thee." Here's a man that really believed in his heart in what Jesus could do. Somebody had told him about other folks that had been healed, and he cries out and receives an answer to his prayer. And it says, those who followed glorified God. Now, the next story is still Jesus still at Jericho, and there's the story of Zacchaeus. We don't know a whole lot about Zacchaeus. I spent a half hour the other day trying to find out something about Zacchaeus. There's a late tradition, that's just tradition now, not Bible, that says that he later became Bishop of Caesarea. Well, maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But what I'm interested in, did this man get to know about Jesus from Matthew? Matthew the publican, when he was called to be a disciple, made a great feast and invited his fellow publicans to that feast. And I don't think we'll tarry with this because we can't get a certain answer. But I have a notion that this man had heard about Jesus directly or indirectly from Matthew the publican. Anyway, it says Zacchaeus was a chief among the publicans, tax collectors now, and he was rich. And when he saw Jesus was coming, he ran ahead, climbed up, this says a sycamore tree. And of course it means an Egyptian fig, not our kind of sycamore. It had the kind of branches that most anybody could climb easily. And it was beside the road, and the branches probably over the road. And this man climbed up, and Jesus stopped right where the man was and said, Zacchaeus, make haste and come down. Today I must abide at thy house. Jesus knew this man's heart. Jesus knew this man was interested and ready, and says he made haste and came down and received him joyfully. Jesus knew about this ahead of time. Some of the folks murmured, saying he's going to be a guest of a man that's a sinner. He's going to eat with these awful publicans. And says Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, he's really talking to God, behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor, and if I've taken anything from any man wrongfully by false accusation, I restore him fourfold. Jesus said, this day is salvation come to this house. The Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which was lost. This man is now a Christian. He's a follower of Christ. And salvation's come to his house. Not because he divides up his property. He does that because his heart is already turned to God. And so, this man becomes a follower of Jesus. And then Jesus is going to tell another story, another parable, about the 10 pounds, the 10 units of money. And he says, Jesus told this parable because he was near Jerusalem, and because they thought that the kingdom of God should immediately appear. They were expecting what we call the second coming, still, to take place then. And Jesus tells the story of this nobleman who was going into a far country to receive a kingdom. He's going to be made a king in this far country. And while he's gone, he wants his servants to use his money. He says he called his 10 servants and delivered unto them 10 pounds. 3 months' wages, in our language, $2,000. And he said, occupy till I come. Use this money now. The point is that all of God's people receive talents. They receive what God has given them, and we're to use what God has entrusted to us. And so, it says about this man who's gone to receive a kingdom, his citizens hated him and sent a message after him saying, we'll not have this man to reign over us. Now, of course, Jesus himself is going to turn out to be this king. And across the years, there have been folks who've said one way or another, we'll not have Jesus to reign over us. Modern humanism would say just that. So many other folks would say, no, we don't really want Jesus to reign over us. Anyway, this man returned, just as Christ someday will come back again, and he calls in the servant, and there's an accounting, just as there will be when Jesus comes back. And the first man comes in, and he said, Lord, your pound hath gained 10 pounds. Would that be 1,000%? And Jesus says, well, thou good servant, you've been faithful in a very little. Have authority over 10 cities. Take a more responsible place. And the next man says, Lord, thy pound hath gained 5 pounds. And he is commended and rewarded. And the master says, be thou over 5 cities. Now a third man comes, and he hadn't done anything. He's kept his pound wrapped up in what we call a napkin, a piece of cloth. And he says, Lord, behold, here's thy pound. I've kept it laid up in a napkin. I feared thee. Thou art an austere, a hard man. Thou takest up that thou layest not down, and reapest that thou didst not sow. In other words, he says, you pick up what you didn't put down. Just a nice way of calling him a thief. And you reap fields that you didn't sow. You the kind of man that'll go and cut wheat where you didn't plant any wheat in the neighbor's field. This is a very terrible accusation he's making. And this master says, out of thine own mouth I'll judge thee, thou wicked servant. Thou knewest, at least you said you knew, that I was a hard man, taking up what I didn't lay down and reaping what I didn't sow. If you really thought that I was the kind of man just want to grab every nickel I could get my hands on, why didn't you put my money in the bank? Now, that's perfectly proper translation. I think the point of it is, why didn't you do business with the loan sharks so that at my coming I would have received mine own with interest? And the master says, take the pound from him and give it to this man that has 10 pounds. And they said, Lord, some of the other servants, he's already got 10 pounds. And Jesus says, well, to every one that hath shall be given. Sometimes the people who are faithful, God rewards them with larger and larger responsibilities. And then there's going to be the familiar story that we call the triumphal entry. On Palm Sunday, we call it. And this is going to be strictly in fulfillment of the Old Testament prophecy in the book of Zechariah, chapter 9, verse 9. And it says, he's going on up to Jerusalem, and when he came to Bethany, just outside of Jerusalem, up on the Mount of Olives, he sent two of his disciples, and he says, go into this next village, and when you get there, you'll find a colt tied, whereon never man sat. This colt hasn't been broken, we'd say. Loose him and bring him to me. And this means that Jesus knew where the animals would be tied when they got there. Ordinary man wouldn't know about that now. Jesus knew the future. He said, when you get there, that's going to be the situation. And so they get there. And the owner said, hey, what are you doing untying that colt? And they said, the Lord hath need of him. In other words, Jesus knew that this colt would belong to one of his friends, I think. And so they bring this animal and put their garments on it for a saddle and put Jesus on it. And then they begin to throw their garments in the road. That's the way you do highest honor to a king or somebody like that in that day and time. And so Jesus comes to the place where you go down the Mount of Olives into Jerusalem, and the disciples rejoice and praise God, and the folks begin to say, blessed be the King that cometh in the name of the Lord, peace in heaven and glory in the highest. Now that's Psalm 118:26. It's just a quotation. These folks knew the book of Psalms. And some of the Pharisees came up to him and said, Master, rebuke thy disciples for saying things like that. They didn't think that this was proper. They didn't know who Jesus was. And Jesus says, if these folks hold their peace, the stones would immediately cry out. And then verse 41 of Luke 19 says, when he was come near, he beheld the city. He looked at Jerusalem and wept over it. Jesus knew what was coming. Some 35, 40 years in the future, he knew that Jerusalem was going to be destroyed, and he wept over what was going to be. You and I don't weep over what's going to happen 35, 40 years in the future, because we don't know the future like that. Jesus did. This shows that he was truly the Son of God. And he says now, if thou hadst known, even thou, the things that belong to thy peace, but now they are hid from thine eye. They didn't know who Jesus was. And he says, the day is come that thine enemies shall cast a trench about thee, and compass thee round, and keep thee in on every side. And again, that's going to be Titus in 69:70. And Jesus says, they lay thee even with the ground, and thy children within thee, and they'll not leave one stone upon another. And that's the way it worked out in history. Now, Jesus has come to Jerusalem, and this is the week before the crucifixion. And we have the cleansing of the temple. And that's going to be on Monday before Good Friday. Now, this is the second cleansing of the temple. Over in the Gospel of John, Jesus had cleansed the temple of improper activities at the beginning of his ministry. But it says he went into the temple and began to cast out them that sold therein and them that bought. In other words, you had to have animals to offer at the temple. And it got to be a big business to have animals that were approved available. Now, you could bring your own animal if you were coming from Italy, from Rome, or someplace like that, but you weren't sure it would be approved. And so these people selling the approved animals made a great deal of money. But they'd put this business in one of the outer courts, maybe the court of the Gentiles, maybe the court of the women, but it's there in the temple complex. Now, you say, what was wrong with selling animals? Wasn't that the way to worship before the crucifixion? The answer is yes, but they had put this business in the wrong place, and business was crowding out God, crowding out worship. And so it says, he began to cast out them that sold therein, and those that bought. And Jesus says, it's written, my house is the house of prayer. You've made it a den of thieves. And he taught daily in the temple. And the chief priests and scribes were trying to destroy him. Before a week went by, they did. And they didn't find what they could do. Now, they're going to question Jesus' authority. This is either going to be Tuesday or Wednesday of Passion Week, just before the betrayal. It says, on one of those days, he taught the people, this is Luke 20, in the temple and preached the gospel. And the chief priests and scribes came upon him with the elders. And they're trying to make trouble now. And they said, tell us, by what authority doest thou these things? Or who is he that gave thee this authority? Well, how'd you get authority to drive out these merchants that we told could sell their animals there? And Jesus said, well, let me ask you a question. The baptism of John the Baptist now, was it from heaven or of man? Did John the Baptist really come from God? Did God send him? Or was he just a man doing his own thing? And they thought about that, and they say, you know, if we say John's from heaven, he'll say, well, why didn't you believe him? And then, if we say of men, if we say John just had human authority, the people will stone us. They are persuaded that John was a prophet. And they said, we don't know. And Jesus said, neither do I tell you by what authority I do these things. Of course, he did it with his own authority as the Son of God, and with the authority that God had given him and all that. But these people, again, are just trying to make trouble. And so at this point, Jesus, in his teaching, gives another parable. A certain man planted a vineyard and let it out to farmers, to husbandmen, and went to a far country. Now, if you look in the Old Testament, Deuteronomy 32, Isaiah 5, Isaiah 27, other places, the vineyard is normally an illustration of the people of Israel. I think that's what this is about. God had planted a vineyard. God had planted his people in this land. And he sent a servant to claim his part of the harvest. And it says they beat up the servant, and sent him away empty. And he sent another servant, and they beat him also. And the third they wounded and threw out. In other words, God had sent his prophets across the years, and Isaiah was put in a hollow log and sawn in two, and Jeremiah was thrown in the dungeon. Some of the prophets were killed. Now, many of them were mistreated. And then in verse 13 of Luke 20, then said the Lord of the vineyard, what shall I do? I'll send my beloved son. Of course, it's God sending Jesus. And when the husbandmen saw him, they reasoned among themselves, saying, this is the heir. Let's kill him, and the inheritance will be ours. If we kill the heir, then we'll just take over. And of course, this is going to refer to the crucifixion of Christ. And it says, this Lord will come and destroy those husbandmen and give the vineyard to others. And that's exactly what took place in the book of Acts. And then in verse 17, he said unto them, what is this then that's written? The stone which the builders rejected, the same has become the head of the corner. That's Psalm 118:22. You see, it says it's written. And the rejected stone, this is referring now to the building of Solomon's temple. The cornerstone was rolled down the hill. They weren't ready to place it. And you get this from Jewish history. And every reason in the world to believe it's true. The stone was rolled down the hill, and eventually they had to go down and get it and bring it back and put it in the place of honor. And of course, that's a picture of Christ, the cornerstone of the church, the foundation of the church, rejected by these Jewish leaders, and yet he becomes the head of the corner. And it says, whosoever shall fall upon that stone shall be broken. On whomsoever it shall fall, it will grind him to powder. Here's Jesus as the judge. And then these chief priests and scribes, trying to take Jesus and get him in trouble, they understood that this parable was against them. And says they watched him and sent out spies. And one of these men came up and says, Master, we know that you teach rightly. Is it lawful to give tribute to Caesar or not? Now, they were figuring that anything he said would be wrong. If he said, yes, give tribute to Caesar, that'll make the common people angry. If he says, no, don't give tribute to Caesar, they'll just take it right over to Pilate and Herod and folks like that and say, hey, we got a fellow down here telling people not to pay the taxes. Won't you Romans deal with him? They thought that anything he said would give them a handle to the situation. And it says, Jesus perceived their craftiness and said, show me a penny. Show me a denier, a little coin. Whose image is on this coin? Well, it was the image of Tiberius Caesar Augustus. And on the coin, it had Son of the Divine, the highest priest. But Jesus looks at this coin, and he says, now, whose image is this? And they say, that's Caesar's. And so Jesus says, well, render unto Caesar the things which be Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God's. In other words, a Christian has responsibility to the government. 13th chapter of Romans says, let every soul be subject to the governing authorities. Yes, we have responsibilities to our country. Jesus spoke that when the Roman Empire was very corrupt. It wasn't a perfect government at all. And yet he says, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's. But don't forget to render unto God the things that are God's. Maybe this is something we should tarry with. There are too many folks who are perfectly willing to pay their taxes, but they've never rendered to God what belongs to him. You see, we belong to God because God created this universe, and he created us individually. We belong to God because we ate this morning food that he provided, and we've been breathing air that he created. We belong to God. If we're Christians, we belong to God because his son died for our sins. And Jesus says, now listen, be sure you render to God the things that are God's. and they couldn't do anything with him on that score. Now, there are questions at this point by the Sadducees, and it says, which deny that there is any resurrection. The Sadducees were among the leaders of the Jewish people at this time. Pharisees were the other party. These Sadducees were really philosophers, really Greek philosophers and Persian philosophers. They had been influenced by the Gnostics, yet they claimed to be Jews. Just like there are so many folks today that won't claim to be Christians, but their thinking is really evolution, humanism, and things like that. And they come with a question that they think will make trouble. They don't believe in the resurrection. And they said, Jesus, we had in one of our families a man that got married, and he died without any children. And so the second brother, according to their custom, married the widow, and he didn't have any children, and he died, and the third brother married her, and the fourth one married her, and the fifth one, and the sixth, and the seventh. And it says they all died without children. Now they say, in this resurrection, we don't believe in it, but whose wife she going to be? You'll have seven men standing around in heaven, each one claiming her. And it says, last of all, the woman died also. And now, in the resurrection, whose wife will she be? And Jesus said, well, now in the resurrection, they neither marry nor are given in marriage. But in this respect, they are like the angels in heaven. And so, Jesus has answered them. And he says, the fact that there's going to be a resurrection is proven by the phrase, God is the Lord of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Well, that was after these men were dead physically, but they're still alive. They are still God's people. And Jesus wants us to understand that these folks who've passed on are still spiritually alive. May God bless you throughout the hours of this day.